another podcast provided by the CPA Technology Advisor at the intersection of technology and public accounting. Accounting Firm Security to Go is a monthly discussion with Executive Editor Greg LaFollette and Information Security Expert Dave Cieslak.
Good morning. Greg LaFollette, Intersection Live, recording Accounting Firm Security to Go, Episode 2. I'm real happy to again welcome our permanent guest and really the resident expert. I should be the guest, and David Cieslak should be the host, because he's the one that has all the domain knowledge. Good morning, David. Thanks for sharing your time again today.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you.
Well, it's a really nice day. I'm stuck at the Newark Airport, as the Newark Airport is closed for an ice storm, and you're sitting out in L.A. where the sun's shining and God's in heaven, right?
Pretty darn much. It's a beautiful morning here.
Good for you. I'm glad that that's happening. So, I want to, before we get going, Dave, I want to remind people of a couple of things. Number one, as we do for all of our podcasts on Intersection Live and through the entire series of electronic things from the CPA Technology Advisor, we keep a set of show notes. So, a couple of days after the podcast, up on our website will appear a complete menu of all of the sites and product names and things like that David might mention as we go through, so you don't have to scramble for a pencil or try and remember something that was said, or you know, what was that product or what was that website or something. Just go to the CPA Technology Advisor, cpatechadvisor.com, or I do cpata.com, kind of the cheap and easy way, and click on Intersection Live. You'll find the show notes for Accounting Firm Security to Go and for our other webcast series, Tech to Go, which is the granddaddy, been around for a year now, and Small Business Consulting to Go. And they're all there, as are the schedules for recording. So if you've joined us live on TalkShoe or would like to do that, all of our schedules are there and our dates are there. We will be recording Tech to Go episode 12 on Wednesday, the 19th of December at 5:30 p.m. That's Eastern Standard Time. And Small Business Consulting to Go, actually immediately before that, at 4 p.m. on Wednesday the 19th. So that'll be kind of a podcast afternoon for me. And as usual, we'd love to have you. And if you're interested, be sure to dial in and join us. And that's always it's always a good time to have you here. So let's get going, David. Last time we talked. You kind of broke everything down for us, and we said today we were going to talk about spam, and there's certainly a lot of that, but you broke everything down for us in kind of what you called four pillars. So tell me again what those four pillars are.
Well, you've got availability.
Okay.
In other words, the system's available to you when and where you need it,
right,
based upon who you are, what you've got access to.
You've got, and actually, Greg,
you've got notes in front of you. So
we talked about confidentiality.
Yep, confidentiality.
Right.
And that's basically information is going to only be available to authorized users and not to anyone else.
Right. And then the integrity is kind of the flip side of that. That when I see it, I know what it is. I know that it's accurate, right?
Correct. The integrity is basically saying no unauthorized individuals have changed something in ways that they shouldn't have. So
right.
it's basically changed authorized.
Okay. And then the last one is accountability, which kind of makes sure that you have a track of what was changed.
Correct.
Okay.
That's just making sure that we know who did what.
Okay. So we've got confidentiality, integrity, availability, and accountability. And as I thought about those and said, well, okay, we wanted to talk about spam. We get lots of interest from partners and practitioners all around the country trying to figure out how to manage spam. And they all live in fear that they're going to, not that they're going to, well, they don't want to obviously get more spam, but what they're all scared of is they're going to miss something important. And they want to know how to handle that. And this is a big problem. Which of those, confidentiality, integrity, availability, and accountability, spam covers really kind of all of those in a way, doesn't it, David?
Yeah, it really does touch on virtually all of those. Maybe not accountability quite as much, but absolutely, you know, confidentiality, integrity, and availability. And we can talk about that kind of from a different perspective. I mean, when our email inboxes are inundated with just untold amounts of spam, then at what point does my inbox no longer belong to me? When is it no longer my own? So when we talk about availability, if we are just literally so beat up by the amount of spam that's flowing through, so again, it threatens availability.
Sure. Now, David, you chair the AICPA Top Techs Task Force, and I've had the privilege of serving on that task force and working for you. You're a hard taskmaster, too. working for you over the last, whatever it's been, 2 or 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. And the 2008 version isn't quite ready to be released yet. Will be, I think, right after the first of the year.
Correct.
But I think we can give people a little bit of, if not a preview, at least kind of a review of where we were last year. And I was looking at those this morning, and I went, you know, 5 of those top 10 techs from last year dealt with items that were kind of around this spam issue. Their security and identity and privacy and document management and remote computing. And mm-hmm. all of those are in one way or another affected by spam.
Yeah. Well, it's probably helpful, too, to just comment right as we're getting started, Greg, that, you know, one of the reasons that, spam is such a huge challenge is not just because it comes in such large quantities, you know, and it fills our inboxes and wastes our time and so forth. But really, if we think about the role of email is the number one application that each and every single computer user uses day in and day out. It is the number one thing that users do with a computer. And so it really represents our touch point or our conduit to the outside world for so many of us. In fact, I know for many of us, first thing we get up in the morning, after we pass the restroom, we go right to the computer and maybe check to see what email came in, the night before, kind of thing. Or, definitely throughout our day as we work, in our respective day jobs, we're looking at that inbox all day long, because it really is. It's our connection, our touch point to the outside world. So the malicious folks out there understand that. They understand that is, the application we use the most. They understand that is their best possible way to gain access to us and to our machines and to our information. So they really do. They look at our email inbox as their golden opportunity to really make that malicious connection with us. And so in spam, that what we're talking about today really is one of their principal ways of doing that.
Yeah, it's a problem that has started about the day after we started using email, and probably been with us forever and probably always will be, in one fashion or another. And it's partially because the old saying is now. It's interesting that in the computer world we already have old sayings, but one man's porn is another man's spam. And we say that kind of as a throwaway line, but that's a really big deal. Everybody has, in one way or another, a different definition of what spam is, right?
True enough, and yeah, you're right. There's in terms of what people want to see, what they want to allow, at what point do they consider that a nuisance? We're looking for effective ways, and almost for the computer to read our minds a little bit and say, no, that's not something I would want or be interested in or waste my time with. Whereas others might look at that and say, well, there might be something meaningful there. There might be something of interest to me there, and I sure wouldn't want to miss that.
Right. Well, David, and for all of our listeners, I have a real treat to bring in. I see that that Mark Sonner is dialed in. I'm going to bring him on in just a second. Mark is the head of product development and innovation for a little company called Message Labs, which serves a huge number of companies, everything from Fortune 500 down to mom and pop stores all over the world. And Mark has been kind enough to join us from across the pond. And Mark, as I've read your bio and your background, you've appeared on lots of different places, BBC and CNBC, and now we're making your life complete because you're now appearing on Intersection Live. Thanks so much for joining us, Mark.
Thank you very much for having me, Greg. Yes, my life is complete now. Thank you very much.
That's great. Well, I appreciate your carving some time out late in the afternoon for us. So we're talking as you dialed in a little bit ago, so you can tell. Mark, I'd like to introduce you to my friend Dave Cieslak, who's a regular guest, and Dave is in the U.S. the go-to guy in the security world. He is a CPA and a CITP and a GSEC, so he certainly got the security background. And David, our other guest here, Mark Sonner, has been around in this world for a long, long time, and as head of product development and innovation, you brought Message Labs kind of brought that to the U.S. here, what, 4 or 5 years ago, isn't that right, Mark?
Yes, around about the year 2000 was when we sort of started small and then sort of built things up from there.
Okay, well, you guys have just released your annual report on spam and what's happening, and the numbers are getting so overwhelming that they're really kind of hard to wrap your head around. That there are so few legitimate email messages and so many. How much of the pipeline, how much are we spending, and what does it cost us just in terms of infrastructure to deal with what's commonly referred to as spam now?
Well, so that I think that's kind of the thing that has really kind of escalated massively in the last really 4 years. So post 2003, in fact, January of 2003 is when the spam world, or rather people's experience of spam, jumped quite significantly. And there was a virus appeared called Phobig, and that was the moment when basically the virus world and the spam sending world really converged. And it was also the time that sort of fast fixed links to the home were becoming normal via broadband or cable modems, and all of these things basically combined together with legislation appearing to make spamming bad, to drive the spammers further underground, and then basically make them use other people's computers to send spam, to massively amplify how much they could send, but also to give them a degree of anonymity.
Sure.
And so that sort of starting point back then, when around about 2003, the average percentage of spam heading towards corporate gateways was around about the 35% mark.
Okay.
By February, March, that was already approaching 40%. And the situation actually peaked around about the 2004 mark, where at its worst, we were actually seeing global levels of spam nudging the 90% mark. Now, ironically, the spammers themselves even concluded that they were too successful because they were using viruses to basically pollinate their rather sort of seed their bots that would then send spam, and they were using them in a form that would be self-replicating. They were also very big blips on the security radar. And so what happened next, around about sort of 2005 up until almost the present time, is that the spammers have become much more stealthful. So we don't see mass mailing viruses anymore, which has lessened the volume slightly. But it also means that they are a much smaller blip on the radar, which kind of makes things harder to detect. So bringing us right up to date, I can tell you that for November of 2007, global spam levels are now at around about the 75% mark. So in terms of the cost of basically sorting this out, it really depends. A big factor is where are you deploying your detection? Because with any connection to the internet, you've got your leased line, you have the A end, which is the internet side, and sure. The B end, which is you as the customer side. And depending on where you basically put your filter, because since volumes have become so high, it starts to make quite a big difference. Because if you actually have to receive 900,000 messages to then make the decision that you don't want them, that actually is costing you something anyway in terms of bandwidth and just sheer mail processing. And so that in itself can actually sort of ramp up the cost quite a bit. And increasingly, I think people are looking to push detection back into the cloud at the internet level, where you're not going to take that bandwidth and mail processing hit.
Okay, so there's really a couple of different ways. Now, Mark, understand in the world that David and I live in the world of practicing public accountants in the U.S., about 90% of the firms, the people that we talk to, live in offices of 10 or fewer people. And,
okay.
You know, there's lots of different ways to do this. As you just pointed out, you can do it in the cloud or you can do it locally or whatever. But, David, talk to me a little bit about your experiences. You talk to this average small practitioner, and just keep it at the firms of, you know, say 25 and under. Many of those firms try to do this email detection and control in-house, and they use things. I've heard you talk about whitelists and things like that. Talk to me a little bit about what they use and how it works for them.
Sure. And I think it's
David, you're breaking up.
Sorry about that. It's been kind of an evolution, and so we've seen a number of different products that have played a role over time as we've kind of worked our way through the spam challenge. You know, maybe at first we started with working on a blacklist kind of approach, and in that kind of approach to spam, we basically said, you know what, I'm going to allow everything to flow freely through to my inbox, but I will go ahead and I'll mark up those messages. I'll indicate those messages that show up that I don't want to receive, and I'll put those on my blacklist. And so really what we had is, you know, kind of free flow of messages except those that were specifically prohibited or been blacklisted. And it didn't take very long at all for folks to figure out, well, I'll just, you know, kind of spoof who I am as a user or always change my sender name. Therefore, I would, in effect, virtually never appear on the blacklist. That blacklist sender would only be used once, and after that, they would flow freely through to an end user's inbox again. So that strategy didn't work well or didn't work long, that's for certain. So then folks said, well, maybe what I'll do is I'll take the flip side approach. I'll use whitelist. And what that basically says is I'm going to deny everything. No one will be allowed except for those people that I put on my good guy list.
So these are the ones every once in a while I get an email back. I get an email message from someone that says, hi, I've received an email from you, and unless I know who you are, that you're like a real person, I'm not going to let that email through, so click here or answer here or do something else to, you know, basically to, if you want to get on the white list, do this.
Correct.
What should I be doing with those? Or should I pay any attention to them? Or those things work or what?
Those things do work. The problem is, and this is, you know, just I guess maybe a sign of how crazy some of this has become. Sometimes those very, you know, list for, you know, confirmation, those messages asking us to confirm that you were the bona fide sender or you are in fact, you know, a real person trying to send through a legitimate message. We've seen those getting caught in spam filters on the other side. So at some point you were looking at it saying, wow, it's got to the point where we've almost got ourselves in a situation with dueling spam filters.
Right.
You know, one Yeah, so I've tried to correspond with a number of folks, and sure enough, the message has never made it through for that very reason, that they've got a whitelist system. It sends me a challenge. The challenge winds up in my email spam filter, and so pretty soon, all I wanted to do was send a simple message, and we're getting, literally blocked from even that simple kind of communication. So whitelist breaks down, too, because folks are just really not they're very concerned that, legitimate email, just even much like our example just now, that the legitimate email, the legitimate messaging isn't going to make it through. So people have become uncomfortable with that as the overall approach. And a piece to think about in all of this is that no matter if they're using a blacklist or a whitelist, a piece of this whole puzzle is that all of these products, all of these strategies also are looking at content as well. They're trying to look at the message, and whether it's the subject line, the message body, the words that are in the body of the message, they're really looking at that and saying, do I see anything that looks, objectionable or that looks undesirable,
David, the blacklist and the whitelist, I mean, they're not doing that. They're just looking at the address, right?
They're looking at the sender, okay. Correct? So that when we talk about blacklist and whitelist, but no matter what product you're using, most all of those whitelist or blacklist approaches are also employing, at the same time, some kind of we'll call content filtering, looking at the contents of the message as well to figure out whether or not
so,
to allow
so
it.
Let me ask another question. I've got you and Mark. You kind of being the domain expert in the public accounting world, and Mark being being a broader expert in the entire spam and virus world. I have often been concerned when I get something that may just be, like B2C, just some sort of an update, we're having a sale kind of a thing. And down at the bottom, it says, because of the Can Spam Act, down at the bottom, it says, click here to remove me from, remove my name from your list. And, the old style thought was, never click there because that just tells the bad guys, hey, I'm a real person. What's your thought on that, Mark?
Right. Well, I think my immediate answer is avoid those. So hopefully these messages probably wouldn't be getting to you in the first place, depending on the level of filtering that you're using. But more broadly, the reason I say that is 2007 has actually been a very interesting year in the sort of email security landscape. We've seen some innovation and some stuff shifting this year that hasn't really happened since about 2003. And one of the big things that is taking place is a switch to putting either malware or spam messages or spam content in other file formats, such as PDF, behind hyperlinks. So spam content or malware content is increasingly no longer in an attachment, it's in a link, because the bad guys have figured out that the vast majority of email filters don't follow links, and you can't express in software if a link is good or bad. You have to follow it, and if the filter doesn't follow it and check that out, and very few do, it means it's going to get through to someone's desktop. And so that has become, from the bad guy's perspective, links are the path of least resistance.
Okay,
so
then that becomes
unsolicited.
That becomes part of this whole idea then of social engineering. If you can get somebody who's silly enough to click on a bad link or a malware link, then the bad guys are in.
That's right. But worse still, they're getting very, very adept at making these things look legitimate. So possibly not so much relevant to maybe sort of the accounting space, but things that are in the sort of that are in a sort of global popular zeitgeist, like YouTube, for instance, you get bluffed YouTube messages or messages that are dressed up to key to global events, such as a news item about global warming or tsunami or bird flu, etc. So they pick things that are popular, and then what you think is a news item is actually either a Trojan or a spam message. And this shift from attachments to links does mean that more things are actually sort of getting through to people's in trays and then they're potentially clicking on them. And that from that reason alone, I think avoid links in unsolicited messages if they are getting to your in-tray.
Okay, so now as we move, you know, you heard David was talking about, so we started kind of with the blacklist, and then we went to the whitelist, and then we got to some products that were you know, what you called the B side, Mark, the client side, the, you know, so I'm using a product, either a little appliance in some cases, or some sort of a program that I'm running at on my local machine or maybe on my server that tries to look at stuff. How what was the history on those? How, and then where did we go from there, Mark?
So these products have, as you say, spam has been a phenomenon since, I guess, email certainly really hit the corporate world, which I guess we could trace back to around about 1995. But volumes didn't ever really kind of got to the point where they were truly hampering productivity until around about the year 2000. Up until that point, most people, unless they were really, really unlucky, weren't seeing more than approximately like one or two messages a day. As things then started to pick up, you see various virus programs started to appear as other desktop security software, such as desktop antivirus, started to view things like spam filtering or latterly phishing, which sort of came a little bit later, as being another market that they could move into. And so it started with software, and then similarly, the appliance, both at the sort of more consumer end, so very basic routers, can plug into some sort of basic primitive blacklist, or at the more high end, with where larger companies might actually deploy in the past, probably software at an email gateway, and more recently, the sort of solution du jour, I guess, would be appliances. And this is because the volumes have become so much higher, you need something which is going to be able to keep up from a processing perspective.
Sure.
So that's kind of the sort of evolution that's taken place there. The problem is that the bad guy side of this, the flip side, are also moving very, very quickly. And they have one kind of ace up their sleeve in that they are leveraging the power of the internet. So when you're dealing with bots, or what are referred to as botnets, these collective mass of infected machines that are out there on the internet sending spam, they can basically sort of garner, because they're using the sheer scale of that you get behind it with something like the internet, to basically rotate the mechanisms that they're using. This suddenly means that things like blacklists, or filters that are being working from sort of honeypot type systems where you're deliberately trying to get spam to see what's out there, suddenly become very, very reactive. And so what we've seen is that the bad guys are getting faster and faster at kind of changing very rapidly their techniques. And so you've got such a fast moving target that generally solutions that are in any way reactive have been getting less effective. And I think that the end result is probably kind of plain to see in people's inboxes as more stuff is getting through.
Okay, I think I understand where you're going with that now. David, I've heard you speak of the kind of the next, I guess the next generation of how that stuff is handled, which is, you know, I can't do a blacklist. That didn't work. I can't do a whitelist. And now, following what Mark has said, I can't handle the onslaught of the amount. I can't buy enough horsepower or keep it updated enough in my office on my server. So basically, I outsource this to someone, and there are a bunch of companies, and Message Labs is certainly one of the leaders in this space. But there are a bunch of companies that do that, and I know, for example, Google just bought a company called Postini, and Mark, that's a competitor of yours, right?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Okay. And I know they got good stuff, and I know you guys have got excellent stuff. And there's a bunch of other ones. And a lot of ISPs actually use those. David, I've heard you talk about that. Kind of describe it. Talk to the accountants in the world about how that kind of a system works, and then we'll let Mark kind of chime in and maybe refine that a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. I think I appreciate that Mark has done just a real good job of just kind of a describing that just the way this challenge continues to evolve and increase, and at the pace at which this malicious content is able to kind of morph and really they are truly moving quickly, so it's getting harder and harder to hit them as a target. And so I think one of the things that I've shared then over time with end users is that it seems to be that probably the most effective strategy or better strategy or the best strategy maybe even today, as we look at trying to more effectively filter out spam, is it's not enough to look at blacklist, whitelist, or content filtering kinds of strategies, or at least not completely. Those in and of themselves don't seem to be doing everything we need to have done. And so there are a number of vendors out there who basically said we need to actually kind of step back a bit and look at behavior of the actual sender themselves. So in other words, excuse me, if they're looking at a particular IP address, or they're looking at all of a sudden an onslaught of messages, coming from, an IP address that has no known history of just opening up or waking up and sending 10,000. In other words, it's not a known, list, kind of email type service that's actually sending bona fide messages, and they're looking at that saying, that just seems really odd that all of a sudden this one IP address would wake up and transmit 10,000 messages and then just be done, and that's the first and only we've ever heard from them, and it may very well be the last we ever hear from them. That just doesn't seem like good behavior, as it were, and I bet you we can probably just cut that off in real time. Or as we look at that and just say, I'm gonna stop you right there based upon bad behavior before I even get to looking at the content of the message or whitelist or blacklist or anything else. Let's just look for what appears to be just odd behavior and start filtering based upon odd behavior. And I know, I've got maybe a little more familiarity with Postini, the product that Google just purchased, but I know that as I've listened to some of their folks talk and seen some of their marketing materials, they're sharing that they're able to filter off over half of the spam just by using this kind of real-time SMTP monitoring approach. In other words, saying, I'm going to filter off the messages or the spam just based upon bad behavior. And then we'll put the remainder through some of our other filtering mechanisms. But honestly, so much of the spam can be probably intercepted and filtered off just initially based upon bad behavior of these senders. And it's good to know, too, by the way, when we talk about, bad behavior, we're not talking about, repeat offenders or known known folks that are necessarily sending this stuff out. Instead, what happens is much of the spam today is actually coming from hijacked units, hijacked computers that someone has somehow or another gained unauthorized access to.
These are the bots that Mark was talking about, right?
Yes, using that as exactly. They're spam bots, and they've become zombies, as we call them, in someone else's army, and they are acting as basically relay platforms and conduits to just blast out spam, and they'll be used once and never used again. So again, that's all part of why this is such a huge challenge.
So I guess what I'm hearing you say, David, is this is now a war where size really matters, and if you have a large number of mailboxes or domains that you're managing, you get to see more, so you can. It's kind of like a an air traffic control center, and that's what I envision if I went to your command center, Mark. That it's kind of like an aircraft or an airline control center where you're watching all of these things. That's probably not that exciting, but you're watching all of these things, and this stuff is all moving like in real time. It's not something that you write and then launch weeks later. Do I understand that correctly?
You understand that absolutely correctly. In fact, we actually do have in our network operations center, it sort of looks a bit sort of NASA-like, where we have on a very, very large screen a map of the world. And it's quite interesting, actually, because you watch virus outbreaks actually follow the sun as the various time zones come and go offline. And as they are coming and going offline, that also has an impact on spam patterns. So and the bad guys also use time zones, so that we're dealing with people that are really, really adept now. I've actually been just thinking, I've been struggling for a way of maybe kind of explaining the concept without making it sound self-serving.
Okay.
So here's my attempt at this. Whether it's us or whether it's, you know, any one of the other very reputable people, I think the concept of dealing with it in the cloud is becoming just very logical as the volumes have gone up. And I think the analogy to compare it to a bit like water filtering, because in the same way as you wouldn't expect to have to boil your own water at home before you could use it, clearly that would be insane. But in IT terms, that is what everyone is currently doing with their internet traffic. And it's basically, because it is such a specialist task now, you know, in the same way as you're not going to be an expert on what constitutes botulism, so you expect the water authority to have dealt with that upstream before it can get anywhere near you.
Great,
and in the same
metaphor.
Vein, not just companies like ourselves, but also ISPs must also take some accountability here now in the traffic that they are passing. Up until recently, sorry, I'll pick it up.
No, you're fine.
Up until recently, I think people haven't been holding to account the ISPs who, to stick with the same analogy, are kind of pumping out the equivalent of raw sewage and saying, you sort it out, your problem. Whereas they're in the perfect place, as David pointed out, understanding what constitutes bad traffic. So bots, for instance, we will know a lot about the reputation of an IP address and also about the whether the conversation that those IP addresses attempt to have actually look valid. Bots have a very, very distinctive sort of vapor trail. And the bigger the base that you have, so we currently process about 2.5 billion email connections a day, and that means the bigger we get, the better we get. Similarly, ISPs are in a perfect place upstream to have all this information. And I guess the best way to explain it is just if you imagine for a moment that every ISP the world over did this, the spamming problem and the job of the spammers would be infinitely harder, and we would have a very, very different situation. And I think in the future, which is probably about 2 years out, that kind of concept of filtering, having it in the fabric of the internet, will ultimately become much more normal.
Okay, so Mark, let's back up just a second, and let me try to do a quick explanation of what you mean by doing this in the cloud. Essentially, what I do as a domain name owner, and this is at the corporate level, not at an individual, my mailbox at home perhaps, but at the corporate level, if I've got a mailbox that's, you know, greg@thecpatechnologyadvisor.com, we take that domain and we say, anytime you send email to that domain, don't give it to me, but send it instead to Message Labs or to MX Logic or to Postini or to AppRiver or to, you know, all there's a bunch of them, and, you know, as you said, most of them I believe are reputable, and the larger they are, in this case probably the better they are. So I point that and I say, before it ever comes to me, send it to them, and when you get it, you quote-unquote look at it and wash it and take all the bad stuff and move it over to the side and say, Greg doesn't want all this garbage. He only wants the good stuff. So you send me the good stuff, and then you kind of you keep the rest of the stuff in a holding tank and send me a report whenever I want it and say, if you want to go in and wade around in that sewage, you sure can. Do I summarize that about right?
That's a very eloquent and a very accurate description. It's exactly like that. And basically, because of the kind of global the scale of the infrastructure, it basically means that bad stuff hits us first. You know, we take out the bad stuff and send on a clean feed, and we will have infrastructure very, very close to where you are locally. So don't think that emails are kind of being routed way, way, way off on the internet. The general latency of these kind of transactions is measured in seconds or sub-seconds.
Okay.
So the fact that this is happening is actually imperceptible. But on the bonus side, because it's out there in the cloud, it means there's no hardware or software or anything necessary at the customer end. It just happens.
Okay, so let me pose now a security question that David, you can certainly relate to, and I know that you've been asked this question. When I do this, because I am a CPA and I'm practicing public accounting, much of the information that I pass via email is in one way or another something that I would consider, quote, confidential, even if it's the fact that I happen to have a client relationship with, you know, with ABC Bakery, that I consider confidential. And, you know, we can do all the encryption and password protecting and stuff like that, but many practitioners are just scared about the idea of, quote, somebody else looking at my email. And giving someone permission to do that would be, you know, I've heard people say, well, I can't use Message Labs because that would be a violation of Gramm-Leach Bliley. What's the answer to that?
Right. Okay. So this is a very interesting question. I think basically because you could have asked that this whole question has existed forever. Now you could actually think of the same thing, you could ask the same question of your ISP, but I think because of the nature of what we're doing, the performing the hygiene process, we're really drawing attention to the concept of scanning and what that means, and it's making people think about it in a way that perhaps they hadn't before. That the issue of, you know, email effectively traveling over the internet in an open form, very much like a postcard, has always existed. What it does mean is because we are essentially drawing attention to the concept is that we ourselves have to be whiter than white and be able to prove that. So what we have found, because I mean several of our customers, for instance, are our government, and you can bet that they take this concept very, very seriously. And so we found very early on that we basically had to auditable standards. So internationally, ISO 17799 is the standard that basically means not just how do we operate from a technical perspective, so where are data centers, what kind of mechanisms do you need to get into them, but it even goes right down to how do we partition up our data, who can actually access the or control the filters that are handling the sort of 2.5 billion email connections a day, and how did we actually vet them from an employment perspective? And all of that, it has to be independently audited from an independent party.
Right.
And so we basically have all that and are very, very open about the system. But I think just to go back a stage, there is, with any security consideration, you're always going to be balancing what is the scale of the problem that you're trying to address, which is how comfortable with the mechanisms that you may then use to deploy against that. If some people are, if that's just a complete no-go, then, well, maybe even a connection to the internet is questionable. So I think it's just a question of balance and weighing it up.
super. And I, David, that kind of takes us back to a comment that you made on episode one, where you said if you want absolute and perfect security, you unplug your machine. Didn't I hear you say that?
Yeah, no, and I was going to say, I mean, I think the other, maybe another, the place where we're winding up as a result of all of this is people are now looking, you know, practitioners are looking at it and saying, you know, maybe there's better ways now to transmit or to share some of this confidential information separate and apart or different than email. And I think, and that's definitely something we can talk about as we continue moving forward in our series. But definitely, you know, at some point we look at email and saying, you know what, I need to rethink email as an overall communications medium and understanding not just because of spam, but because of some of these other security concerns, maybe this isn't the best way for us to share that information back and forth.
I think I learned on my 7th birthday when my grandmother mailed me $2 in a birthday card, and the envelope arrived, opened, and the money was gone, that you don't send important stuff in the postal service in like terms of cash either. Well, Mark, I want to thank you a lot for your time this morning. And again, tell me before I let you go, be a little bit self-serving. Tell me what kind of product a Message Labs has for this. For the small accounting firm, they got, you know, 8, 10, 12 mailboxes maybe, or even maybe fewer than that. Do you guys service that kind of an account, and how would they do that?
Absolutely is the straight answer to that. So we actually find that the majority, or about 60%. Of the client base is in the very sort of small enterprise, and the reason for that is, as you say, potentially the smaller you are, you may not have a dedicated IT resource. That's quite common, and as the threats of these problems have not just become more frequent, but they've become really quite a specialist task. And so, just as some of our enterprise customers will use us purely because the level of sophistication now that you need to kind of have on board is becoming really quite high. So that certainly works for the enterprise, but also it's just as applicable for the smaller companies. And certainly we have many, many customers that are sort of 10 users or sub-10 users. And for them, the general sort of suite of products that are most popular are email filtering, which is the kind of stuff that we've been discussing. Also web filtering. And I should say that there's an element to this as well, which is not just blocking the bad stuff, but is also about control. So just knowing how many emails come in and go out of your organization is useful. What kind of websites are being accessed? Again, are people spending time in social networking sites, etc.? All of that stuff is useful. We can provide the same service for IM. And if I could just sneak in one thing, because you've mentioned something which is very, very valid, which is the concept of encryption. And that's something we're also finding is that some sectors, specifically finance actually, are looking at deploying the concept of secure network. So bank to bank, or sometimes bank user to other bank user, that the session of mail is encrypted end to end. And that's also something we can provide. But it's mainly the number one service at the moment would be the email filtering, blocking malicious content and spam.
Okay, and I did. I'm just looking at your website. I see you've got actually a free trial, and that free in the world that we live in, David, that free is usually pretty enticing, right?
That's pretty darn attractive.
That will work. Well, Mark, again, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your insights, and it's about time for dinner in your world, right?
It's just coming up to 6 o'clock here. And I should say, you mentioned, we both made comments about the weather. It's absolutely freezing here in the UK here in December. So I'm going to go and brave the cold night. But thank you very, very much for having me.
Thanks very much, Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
Okay, well, David, it's obvious to me, listening to a guy like Mark Sonner, it's obvious to me that you will have gainful employment for a very, very, very long time.
For some reason, I just don't worry about that.
Yeah, this stuff is really, really scary. It sounds like there's actually a pretty decent solution to a large part of this is just go check out one of these. And Message Labs is certainly a big player and positive guys. Postini is another one, and Google just bought them. So I mean, most of the people probably heard of Google. It's been in all the papers. So they obviously think there's something there. I use a group that actually hosts my Exchange server, and that's a group called AppRiver. They've been marketing reasonably actively to the practicing public accounting market, and they do outsourced Exchange hosting and email scrubbing, same kind of logic, or one or the other, or both. There's another one called MX Logic that I've seen many practitioners use. Any other players that you can think of, David, that are major players in this world?
I think you hit most of the major players. I think the important part of any of this, and I know that there's new folks showing up daily, and that's because the need is significant.
Right.
I mean, it's definitely pronounced. But I think the important point, and the point we want to make sure that we don't miss here, is that even though we may have had a pretty comfortable approach, or been pretty comfortable with our approach to email and messaging and just kind of how we did that previously, really given kind of how things have evolved, where we're at today, I really think that for most all the practitioners, they do need to take another look at that, a fresh look at that, and say, you know what, just because that's the way we've always done it, you know what, I'm understanding that it's a far more dangerous approach than it ever used to be, given some of the threats now that have kind of entered the picture or where we're kind of at with things. And so based upon all of that, maybe we need to rethink, what we do, how we do it, who we do it with, and by so doing, come up with a better, smarter, and definitely more secure approach.
Sure. Well, this is one of those areas, whenever we talk about outsourcing, and an awful lot of practitioners, the minute you say that word, their mind goes to Key Punch in India, and that's not at all what I'm talking about. But this is actually outsourcing your mail scrubbing, and I really liked Mark's metaphor about the water service.
I thought that was terrific.
That works really, really well because, I mean, even if you do put a filter on there, how do you test for botulism?
Correct. No, and I think that was a good way to think of it. But and you bring up a good point as well, Greg. I think, maybe previously so many of us took really a negative view toward, outsourcing much of anything. We felt like that alone kind of would threaten our fiduciary, duty to really kind of guard the confidentiality of the customer data and so forth. But in fact, what we're finding is that if we're aligning ourselves and working with organizations that are certified and reputable and have long-standing reputations, and this really is their core competency, I think that by working with and through organizations like that, adding them to the team, our virtual team as it were, we're going to find ourselves in a much better place than if we just try to continue to go at our own and do it all in-house.
Sure, and you may actually get to the point where in a few years you're talking about by not using someone like that, you're opening yourself up to criticism because you're not following best practices.
Makes good sense.
Interesting. So, David, we are recording Accounting Firm Security to Go, Episode 3, on Tuesday, the 22nd of January, 2008. My note says 2007. That would be wrong. It's 2008. January 22nd, Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern. And we, again, going back to those pillars, confidentiality, integrity, availability, accountability, we got lots of different things to talk about. What do you think we might talk about next time?
Well, maybe one of the things we may even want to do is move on from this, really kind of step right off this same subject, as I just shared a few minutes ago, looking at then maybe how we can share information more confidentially with our customers, our clients. If email, because of spam and some of the other threats that live within that medium, have really kind of have threatened it so badly that it's not a good way to do some of this confidential exchange ourselves and our key customers. What are some other ways that we can do that?
We'll talk about file
fashion?
Exchange and maybe maybe portals and things like that.
That might be a terrific progression.
Interesting. Well, those are certainly hot topics in the profession, and I look forward to that. David, again, thanks so very much for sharing time with me in your morning, and I want to wish you the best for a great holiday, and we will we look forward to visiting with you on Tuesday, the 22nd of January.
Likewise, Greg. Thank you so very much.
Thank you. And with that, Accounting Firm Security Episode 2 is a wrap, and we will talk to all of you again next month. Happy holidays, everyone.
That wraps up this edition of Accounting Firm Security to Go. Join Greg and Dave again next month for more insight and advice on security issues. This has been a podcast provided by the CPA Technology Advisor at the intersection of technology and public accounting.